Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big Footy Podcast Off-Season Extra, and I'm talking to Dennis Ryan, the newly elected president of the United States Australian Football League. Good morning, Dennis.
Morning, Wookie. How you doing?
I guess it's evening for you, isn't it, really? So, is it evening, morning? I don't know what time it is for you now.
It is morning.
It is morning. It's morning for you and morning for me, but on different days.
Yes.
It's confusing.
Yes, it is.
Well, first off, congratulations on your election to president.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very excited and looking forward to the challenge ahead.
Excellent. I guess really the first thing is to ask just what the USAFL does.
Basically, we just administer Australian football over here. Our mission is to grow the game in the US. So we basically just, help the clubs to organise games between each other. And really our main sort of focus is to run the national tournament every year, which is the biggest tournament of Australian football in the world. It's a fantastic tournament. We have had four divisions of men's teams and one division of women's teams play in Austin over the 3 weekends ago. Unfortunately, it probably is a little bit of the sum of all our parts. We need to do a lot more through the rest of the season to help our clubs develop and grow and spread the game.
Okay. So what's your role in the USFL? I mean, I know you're the president, but what's your specific role in terms of USFL?
Well, one of the main things is that we are a charity. We're what's called a 501c3 over here, so we're a non-for-profit, which there's a lot of rules around that, so I have to make sure that we do good governance and we do our fiduciary duties and those sort of things. So I'm actually just learning a lot about that right now. But also what I want to do is grow the clubs and try and get them to have a bit more vision about where they want to go. We had some really good growth early when we started. The league really formed in 1997 and quickly grew to about, we've been around about the 35 team number now for about 7 or 8 years. But the clubs have kind of got stuck where they just replace the players that they lose. And they're not really having a very sort of big long-term vision. So that's one of the things I want to inspire in our clubs and sort of kickstart the growth again and get us growing again more.
Okay. How did you get involved in Australian football in America, of all places?
Well, obviously, I had the background back home before I came over here. I just actually went on a around the world trip in 1998. Had to come through America. Didn't really want to go through an English speaking country, but came through here. Met up with a friend in Baltimore. He took me to the AFL Grand Final at the Australian Embassy 2 weeks after arriving here and found out that they'd just started up a team. And I ended up getting a job there and got pretty heavily involved with that team, and it's just led from one thing to another. And it really, Australian football is actually the reason I stayed in the US. My passion to develop the game over here, I just see an amazing potential here in the US. I do believe wholeheartedly that our game is the best game in the world. But that also means that the rest of the world needs to play it. And one of the parts of my vision that I've had to accept is that we actually have to get beaten at it one day by an international team for it to truly have been successful at going international. And as much as I'm a patriotic Australian and part of me doesn't really want to see that happen, there's also a big part of me that sort of accepts that that has to happen one day, and it'll be a good day for us when it happens.
Awesome. At the administration level, how much of the game is actually run by Americans and how much of it's actually run by expat Australians?
Well, actually, last year's board didn't have any Australians on it at all. So it's a 7-member board and they were all Americans. So there's a bit of a change over this year. So myself and one other Aussie are back on the board. So there's I think there needs to be a bit of a mix. We can't to have just the all Americans. They sort of miss out on the history and the culture of Australian football back in Australia, which is an important part to know for here. It's also important to recognise that the US is not Australia and that things are going to be done differently over here. So we need to have that mix of Aussies and Americans that are passionate about the game on our board to get the right mix of both cultures.
Okay. So how many teams are there in the USAFL?
Well, there's about 35 teams at the moment. They're at various degrees of viability, I guess you could say. There's plenty of clubs that are going along really, really strongly. The New Yorks, the Denver Bulldogs, sorry, et cetera. Then there's some clubs that have been around a long time but have really struggled, I guess, to get off the ground and have been around the 15 to 20 player mark pretty much since their inception. And one case that comes to mind is Baton Rouge. They actually be 10 years old next year, but they've always been in that sort of flux becoming a real club or folding. And they're the actual type of clubs that I really want to help to get a better grounding and to become a bit more stable. To be struggling for 10 years is a long time, and I really believe we need to help those clubs get to a situation where they're stable and then they can really start to grow and take off from there.
And now I'm told, I spoke to Simon Boyce at the Austin Crows earlier, and he was saying that it's kind of compulsory for all city teams to have a metro-based team. Is that right?
It's not compulsory at all. We try to refrain away from or shy away from telling clubs what to do. It's probably the best way to get them offside and sort of running against you. One of the unfortunate things of the Aussie culture, I think, in footy clubs back home is that we have this mentality of us versus the league. I played for Clayton in the Eastern Football League. They've changed leagues now, but back then it was definitely the mentality was us versus the world, in a sense. And that mentality has carried over a bit here in the US. And it's great for club culture and getting your team fired up on game day, but it doesn't really do much for you in the big picture of trying to grow the game nationally. So I really shy away from telling teams they must do anything. We just try to guide them and give them the tools to help them grow. Metro competitions is an intra-league competition of a club, and it's played on the smaller ovals. So it's basically meant to be played on fields that Americans already have. Obviously, an Australian football field is extremely difficult to come across here in the US. So we realised pretty early on that we needed a format that suited what they already have. So if it's ever going to take off in colleges or high schools, it's got to be able to be played on a soccer field or a football field. And when I say football, I mean American football. We came up with the tennis-side format, which is what Metro footy is. Doesn't necessarily have to be tennis-side. Sometimes it can be 12 or 14 or whatever numbers teams agree to play on. I do want to try and formalise that a little bit more and get clubs to understand that if it's going to grow in their area, we've got to play it on what they already have. So tennis-side is the best format for their size fields. So, clubs, again, have got to the stage where they've got three or four Metro teams within their club and have sort of stopped. They've got happy with that number. I really want to see those leagues grow into 8 or 10 team competitions where the team that then represents them against other cities is truly a representative team, and there's a lot more competition to make that team, and it's going to drive numbers coming to practice, to training and so forth. And clubs, once they get to that level, would have about 150 registered people on their lists, so they'd be quite healthy in terms of financial viability and getting sponsorship and et cetera. So that's my vision, to push those clubs to grow their Metro leagues.
Well, I'm kind of wondering. I mean, I've talked to guys in AFL Japan, AFL East Asia, Europe, Germany, France, those places, Canada as well as you guys. And there's a lot of people playing games on the rectangular fields that are available to them. And I'm kind of surprised that there isn't some sort of international standard for it yet. I'm just wondering if that has ever crossed anyone's mind.
Yeah, probably. You know, I actually had a little conversation with Tony Woods recently about the AFL nines and the difference between the non-contact touch version and the different and between having contact. My thoughts are that the nines, basically, you would have three people in the middle at your centre bounces. Because you're trying to discourage contact. You want to make it safe and fun for everybody. So you want to create space. And by having just two less numbers in at your centre bounces is going to help to facilitate that. So the opposite is when you change it to contact, you should have four in the middle. So it's the same as 18 aside, where you've got eight players in at the centre bounce. The contact in the contest is the same. You can certainly work on your structures for what you would do in your 18 aside game because it's exactly the same numbers in there at that contest. Trying to encourage a bit more contact, so that's why you make it a bit more congested and have a couple of extra players there. So it's little differences like that I think we do need to sort of codify, if that's the word you want to use.
Yep.
Again, it's a little difficult. To the same sort of theory applies to the clubs in telling them what to do. I think that applies a little bit internationally of trying to tell people that this is the way you must do it. It's all fairly experimental still at the moment. So I think whatever works out best and the best practices will kind of work themselves out along the way, and they'll dictate where we go internationally with it, I think.
For sure. So how many players would you say there are in the US AFL at the moment?
That is a little bit of a difficult question to answer. We have a registration that's meant to be a registration for just playing in the league itself. You know, unfortunately, I alluded it to before that our Nationals is our sort of marquee event, and players really only register with the league if they're going to play at Nationals. So we're around 1,000 mark for players registering for Nationals. We know we have more players than that, and it could be 1,400 to up to 2,000 possibly. I don't think it's that high. I think it's probably close to around the 1,400 mark. But obviously those guys and girls are players that aren't coming to Nationals, so they don't register nationally. So we have to restructure how we actually do our registration and find a way that will encourage all players to register so we can get an accurate number.
I know a couple of years ago I read a USAFL report, an annual report, that said that they were going to aim for 10,000 players by 2016.
Yeah, we're pretty sure of that mark at the moment, but I'm still confident. If we could do it, we're not going to probably see a lot of growth next year. But I'm certainly going to reach out personally to each club and try and figure out what it is that or how it is that we can help them to grow. I want to start putting some long term plans in the administration's minds and start putting some things into place that will help us to really significantly grow our numbers. So 10,000 by 2016 might be a stretch, but I'm hoping that by 2016 we've made some significant progress where we're well on the way, and we might only be a year or two off.
All right, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was junior programs. Now, am I right in thinking you had something to do with Footy Kids?
Yeah, I actually started the concept 10 years ago, and basically I was coaching the national team in 2002 in the first International Cup, and I just realised if the game's going to grow over here, we need to start at the grassroots and have kids playing. So I came up with a concept of taking the game to PE in US schools, and basically just teaching PE teachers how to run a very, very sort of watered-down, modified version as a starting point. My hope was that the kids would like it in PE, and that would then lead to schools forming teams and leagues. So I put a proposal together and gave it to a newly elected president in 2000 and, the end of 2002, who I didn't know, and he came over to Australia straight away after he was elected and met with the AFL, and they basically said to him, "Well, if you don't do something about kids, we're gonna you know cut your funding." So he handed over my proposal, which he barely looked at, and they turned around and said, "Well, if you do this, we'll maintain your funding." So he kind of wasn't left with much of a choice. So we had about 6 months funding to start the program off. So I left my job at the embassy and started off on a fairly ambitious path to try and get the game into US schools. I've had some success, but certainly not what I expected to have 10 years later. And it was really a journey about learning a lot about the differences in our particular sporting cultures. There's some major differences. I wish I knew now what I knew. I wish I knew then what I know now. But I still believe in it. I still believe it's the way to go ahead. But we just need much more funding than the small amount of money that we had when we first started.
Okay, that's a pretty good explanation, really. With getting back to the seniors, how often are matches held?
Yeah, not as often as they used to be. But again, you know, the clubs have just become more and more focused on nationals. We are a little bit all over the place. Clubs are playing, you know, a touch version, which you know we call Ausball over here. We actually started that up before AFL came up with their AFL 9s concept. We started in 2006. So clubs are playing that as a pathway to introduce players to the game. They're also playing their Metro, and then they're playing USAFL games against other cities. So, you know, to answer your question properly, do you mean USAFL games? Do you mean Metro?
I guess so. The city v city stuff, the USAFL stuff.
Yeah. So most teams are probably playing 5 or 6 games a year, and that can be in different formats. It can be at tournaments where they're playing multiple games over a weekend or on the one day, or just one-off games where they're playing. And usually the tournament format is basically a half a game. They'll play 2 20-minute halves, and it's because they're going to end up playing 2 or 3 games in the one day or over the weekend that they're in that format. If they play just city versus city, you know, and that's obviously cities that are in closer proximity to each other where they can drive. So New York can drive to Baltimore and drive to Boston and to Philadelphia. So they would play more likely one-off games where they'll play a full four-quarter game of 20 minutes a quarter. And we used to do home and away, but most teams now will, like say, we'll just do the one game a year. So New York will travel to Philadelphia 1 year, and Philadelphia will travel back to New York the next year. So not really enough that I'd like. I'd like to see us playing more. But I also believe in a pathway, so I think the clubs have got to develop their Metro leagues first before we can really start to get to the situation where it's truly a representative team of their Metro League, and the money that they're making out of the registration of having the extra numbers playing Metro would sort of finance the travelling costs of their travelling team playing the other cities, so they'd be able to play a lot more.
What are the challenges involved in setting up like a regular competition?
You know, proximity to other cities to play, you know, clubs having enough players at the start. That's one of the issues that some of our struggling clubs have, is that they'll, when they first start out, that they, you know, don't really have enough players. It's a long way to go to play the closest team, and when they do go and play them, that team's been established for a while, so they get quite a thrashing, so it's not much fun to go a long way, travel a long way, and cop a hiding. So that's one of the areas where I really want to use the model of Sacramento. Sacramento basically started off as a touch league first, so they weren't trying to play anybody else. Golden Gate is you know only an hour or so away, but they weren't really interested in playing against them until they sort of had enough of a foundation in place. So they just started off for the first year or so with just building their nine-a-side touch league, which they were extremely successful at. They quickly were able to then develop into a proper team, and this year, only their fifth year in existence, they played off in the third division final at Nationals. So and they had a win, that was their men's team, and they had a women's team that was extremely competitive in the women's division. So they've certainly shown that it's the way. They've really laid the blueprint of how new clubs, and even the clubs that are struggling, should sort of go in the future. And that's to build that social rec league that has both men and women playing. Rec leagues are very much a big part of the culture here in the US, the sporting culture. Their sporting culture is basically school-based, whereas Australia is club-based. So outside of your school, you don't really have many other options to play. And then once your school career is finished, unless you're elite, you don't go on to the next level. So your career is over. So you have these 18-year-olds coming out of high school that whose sporting career is now finished. Or conversely, if they're good enough to play in college, they come out of college at 22 and their careers are over unless they make it into the pros. So you have this enormous amount of athletes that are reduced to playing in rec leagues where they're playing co-ed touch American football or they're playing softball. Or what really blew me away is they play kickball, which to me kickball is a game for five-year-olds, yet it's a huge industry over here of young adults playing in these rec leagues, basically because they want the social outlet, they want to get a little bit of exercise, and they just have no other options. So that's what they end up playing. So that's where we really came up with the concept of Ausball and decided this was a good entry point into the US market and also a good entry point for us to educate Americans about the game. One of the biggest issues we have over here is what I call the mental model of what Americans have of a contact sport. Their mental model is completely based on their own game of American football. So it's much more violent and physical than what an Australian or Australian football person's mental model of a contact sport is. You know, you and I see a game where we have a contest, you might tackle me, the ball might spill free, or you get a free kick for me holding the ball or whatever, or there's a, maybe the umpire calls a ball up. In any of those scenarios, we all picture ourselves getting up and continuing in the game. So that's our mental model, whereas an American, he sees a violent collision, basically a spear tackle with a helmet, and he sees himself going off to hospital in an ambulance. So he has a much different mental model of what a contact sport is to an Australian. And because of that, they are very reticent to come out and give our game a try. The name football just evokes pictures of their own game. And so they think it's the same. And in fact, they think it's worse because they think it's basically their game without the padding. So it's far more dangerous. So we really have to educate about the fact that our game is a much more skillful game. It's a much more open, and even though contact is a part of it, it happens far less than what it has happened in their game, and it's far less violent. So having the touch game is a great educational tool to teach them that.
So Ausball is literally touch footy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's touch footy, yeah.
Just by a different name,
yeah.
Okay. The US Nationals were finished up not too long ago. How was that? What was that like for you?
That's just a fantastic event. It's always I've been involved with the league here for a very long time, so you don't get to see everybody throughout the season, so it's good to catch up with everybody. It's amazing how quickly the weekend goes and how busy you get, and at the end of it, you really only caught, even though everybody was there, you only get to catch up with half of them. And it's all very much fleeting moments in between the games you've got to either play or coach in or help to administer or whatever it is you need to do. It's really hard to find venues now that can accommodate us. We obviously need 5 footy fields all on the one place, so little difficult to get to accommodate that. Austin is by far the most popular location we've had for nationals. You know, maybe the 1 year we had it in Vegas could compete, but Austin's a fantastic place. There's lots to do outside of the football, so it's quite a good place to certainly wind down after all your games are over. It is an amazingly fantastic event, and I'm sure if you you know, you've got the chance to speak to the Nick Riewoldts and the Tony Woods about it, they would echo my thoughts.
What's your relationship like with like AFL Canada and neighbouring leagues?
We've got a very strong relationship with AFL Canada. I don't really have much to do with any other leagues around the world. I guess that's just the tyranny of distance, mainly. Yep. We play Canada every year in the 49th Parallel Cup, which is basically a game between our two national teams. Both for the men and the women, we alternate between, you know, one country to the other every other year. We do want to make that after next year. Obviously, we have the IC Cup down in Melbourne. After next year, we want to make that more of a home away thing that happens through the year. Now, Canada has struggled a little bit in beating us. I think they've only ever beaten us the once in our history. But we have reached out to them in the past and sort of discussed ways where we can share resources and help out each other out. We strongly believe that you're only as good as your weakest opposition. So we believe for us to get better, it's in our best interest to make Canada, or to help Canada get better. So we're willing to do whatever we can to help facilitate that. It's obviously not all that much, but, you know, we certainly want to work with them. We don't, not against them. We term them as an enemy on the field on the day, but otherwise they are a partner, and anything that they're doing that's working for them, you know, we'd love for them to share with us, and vice versa.
Excellent. The International Cups are obviously next year. You guys are obviously coming down again.
We certainly will be coming down again. We'll be bringing both a men and a women's team. The men came fourth last time in 2011. We obviously want to better that performance. We also realise that it's going to be extremely difficult. We might have a larger pool of players to pull from over here, but the tyranny of distance means that we only get together once or twice, well, usually twice a year. We'll have a camp here in the year where everyone comes out for a weekend. And then we'll have the game against Canada, or in next year's case, we'll have the tournament in Australia. But other than that, we don't get to practice together. We don't, you know, it's a representative team that really just knows each other by the internet in many ways. So to break into the top three of Ireland, PNG, and New Zealand, it's going to be extremely difficult. I would estimate that probably half of all those countries' teams are actually living and playing in Australia together throughout the season. So, you know, obviously their game plan and their knowledge of each other is much more advanced than us. Their skills are probably more advanced. So we're going to have a hard time getting into the top three, but we certainly, you know, welcome the challenge. We've got other ways that we've been working on trying to overcome the difficulties that we have. You know, we're using Skype right now, but we've recently been using a Google Hangout where we can we watched a video of the recent game against Canada, and we basically got the guys onto the call, and you know, we're able to stop the video presentation and use an app that where we could draw on the actual screen and have the players you know, weren't following the game plan and they were out of position, we were able to get them to tell us where they should have been so that they could understand the game plan much better. And I think it's going to definitely be a big help for us going forward, that those little things that we haven't been able to do in the past, and just to go over the game in a much more thorough method. The Revolution coach, Matt Bishop, must have spent an amazing amount of time going through this video second by second and basically picking it. Every single thing out of a full game of football. You can only imagine how long it took him He's just done an amazing job, and it's going to be a great tool going forwards to help us get better.
All right. If I wanted to become involved in football in the United States, how would one go about doing that?
Basically, you would go through the USAFL website, usafl.com. Look up the team, see if there's one near you. And obviously, if there is, you join with that team and make contact with that team and join up. We do have a guide in there about how to start a team. I do want to restructure that and revisit that, get that. I think we can do a bit of a better job on helping people who want to start teams. I do think it's more about starting up a touch league first than actually trying to start up a club in if you happen to be in an isolated city. But certainly we want to help. Our mission here is to grow the game, so we'll do whatever we can to help anybody who wants to get a team started. One of the things I actually want to really visit with the AFL is actually there's a lot of students that come over here and do semesters in college. I think that's a great entry point for us to try and get some sort of intramural touch competitions going inside the colleges. Really the answer for us over here in the US. They graduate, they go into the professional world where they're starting to earn money. They spread all over the country from wherever it is they graduated, so they can either go and play with an existing team, or if they've been playing in college, they'll hopefully have the passion to start up a new team. And from the bottom end, with one of the battles I faced with the schools is that there's no interest from parents in playing an obscure sport. They want their children to play a sport where they could possibly get a scholarship to college. Obviously the tuition fees are very expensive, so if you can get it for free, you'll do whatever you can to get it. Sport is one of the main ways that people can do that over here. Even though at the end of the day, only a small percentage actually get scholarships to go to college. Now, right up until till graduation of high school, the parents are pushing their kids to try and get a scholarship to a college playing their favourite sport. So until we've actually established ourselves in colleges and we're at the stage where we can offer scholarships, we're not going to get the development in the high schools and the middle schools that I'd like to have happen until we can get that first. So college is the main area, and I'd love for some of these students that are coming over from Australia, if we can maybe work with the AFL, set them up with some AFL 9s equipment and the know-how to run a small competition, that when they landed here in the US at their college, that they could grab a few other students together and just sort of start the process and create some leagues. I think it's be fairly easy to do, fairly cost-effective, it would leave those students with a much larger legacy of just coming here for 6 months to study. They started off an actual competition within their college, that could last for many, many years and even outlast them. So it'd be a great little exercise, make it happen.
Okay. Was there anything else that we haven't discussed yet that you wanted to bring up during this interview?
One of the things that has kept me here and sort of inspires my love for the game and the potential that I see in it is that I fully believe that Australian football could become Australia's biggest trade export. That would be fairly immune to the cycle of economic upturns and downturns. Americans just love their sport. If they get involved in a sport, they want to know about its history. They want to go to the sacred turf of the Fenway Fields in Boston and so forth. So if they got into our game, they would all want to go to Australia. They'd want to go to the MCG and be at the MCG to watch a game. And the amount of trade that could create, I think, is just, it has the potential to be, like I said, Australia's biggest export. And I think Australia just needs to realise that, the potential that it has. And it doesn't really matter what sport you prefer, be it rugby or soccer or whatever it may be. Australia's our main, Australian football is our indigenous game that if it grew internationally, would always have benefits to Australia back home. So, the government, if they could sort of have that vision and see that and get behind it a lot more and not just sort of sit back and say, well, the AFL's the governing body, they make lots of money, they can do it all. I think it takes a lot more than just that. And even Australian businessmen, if they could see the potential and, to take a bit of a long-term investment for businessmen, but they see the potential for it. I think there's a lot that could happen quickly, and there's lots of ways we can go about it, but we all sort of need to be on the same page and have a fairly good strategy. But like I said, I just think the potential for this game is so immense. That's unbelievable. I just wish more people could see it.
Okay. I've been talking to Dennis Ryan, the president of the United States Australian Football League. Thank you very much for coming in today.
No worries, Wookie. My pleasure.